This is Imperfectly Honest. I'm Elizabeth, and after about four decades, I'm shifting from the person I always thought I should be to the person I really want to be, in part because I've learned to be honest, both with myself and just about everybody I encounter. It's not always perfect. Sometimes it's a rocky road, but I'm learning a lot by being imperfectly honest and thought you might learn something too.
Hi, I'm Kayla, and you may recognize my voice from the last episode of Imperfectly Honest. I'm Elizabeth's behind-the-scenes collaborator, so you'll likely hear from me a bit more in the future. And today, I'd like to introduce her latest conversation. In this episode, Elizabeth sits down with her friend Lizzie Payton, and like many good connections made in mountain towns, the two met on a chairlift while skiing. Lizzie is the director of Big Sky Snow, which is short for Sustainability Network Organization, and Elizabeth invited her onto the podcast to talk about wildfire preparedness, living with wildfire risk, and what it means to be an imperfect advocate for climate change. If this topic makes your heart race and increases your anxiety because you or someone you love lives in an area that's prone to wildfires or other natural disasters, then this episode is for you. Wildfires may feel far away with snow about to fall here in Montana, but the truth is it's never too early to understand your risks and build confidence through preparation. Elizabeth and Lizzie also speak candidly about the emotional side of climate change, how to show up, take meaningful action, and make lifestyle choices that align with your values without needing to be perfect. Simply put, can you give yourself permission to let life be a little messy and imperfect, showing compassion for the planet and yourself? Something to keep in mind as we go on to the episode. Enjoy.
Hey, listeners. I have invited my friend Lizzie Payton to join us today. We are going to talk about the topic of anxiety produced by wildfires and other natural disasters. We started talking about the idea of recording this summer because we were experiencing some wildfire smoke in Montana, and it was causing some anxiety for both Lizzie and me. And as life sometimes happens, other things have come up and we haven't had a chance to do this conversation since summer. So now we're going to talk about it a little bit more broadly, because while it is no longer wildfire season in Montana, or at least we hope, it is hurricane season. And climate change, unfortunately, is changing our weather pattern so much that we're not quite sure when these seasons fall. So Lizzie, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Elizabeth, and thanks for that introduction. I'm stoked to be here with you.
Lizzie is the director of Snow. And Lizzie, tell us what Snow is.
So Big Sky Snow is a 501c3 nonprofit located in Big Sky, Montana. We put together 40 stakeholders in 2021 to create a climate action plan for the community as an unincorporated community. All of our programs and projects really create an opportunity for every individual and business to be a part of preserving Big Sky's outdoor culture, really into the future, whether it's meeting you as a business or an individual property owner or as a commuter to Big Sky.
Yeah, and I recently joined the Snow board because I randomly met Lizzie on a chairlift and instantly became impressed with her. Her mission was something that was near and dear to my heart. I got particularly excited because what they've been doing in Big Sky is applicable to a lot of other communities. I could go on and on about all the reasons why I love Snow, but wanna go back to our topic. So my experience with wildfire smoke is that it really causes health effects for me. I experienced my first wildfire season when I was having the worst of my health issues, unfortunately. I happened to be living in Denver and they had a ton of smoke coming in, which mixed with the already terrible air quality in Denver. And I as many of you know, had a large tumor that curved my spine and was struggling with a lot of pain from that. And my pain increased by, I would say, about fivefold from that wildfire smoke, and made it much harder for me to heal. Since then, I've just had a lot of anxiety when the wildfire comes in, because I'm afraid of reversing the progress that I've made with my health and about the other health effects that I might be experiencing. Lizzie, what's your experience with anxiety and wildfire smoke?
Thanks, Elizabeth. Yeah, I think it's a really real thing. I have experienced it personally a couple times being evacuated in Sonoma County in California. I ended up living there for a couple of grape harvests to make wine. As a big wine enthusiast, it was a really great experience to live in West Sonoma County. And I just happened to live there during two different fire seasons in 2018 and 2020. And I would say that my primary driver for working on environmental resilience in Big Sky really stems from my experience there in Sonoma County, due to the fact that we were evacuated a couple times. The anxiety around evacuation is pretty real when you go from seeing smoke to being able to see maybe the red flame of the fire at night on the horizon, to then experiencing ash inside your house if you have an open window and deciding that it's time to evacuate. The escalation from going about your everyday work or practices into picking up everything you own and moving it out. And in that case, I was also protecting a bunch of farm animals, was pretty stressful. So I think of it in Big Sky is that experience really informing how I choose to educate the community and their inner opportunity to prepare, plan, and prevent wildfire opportunities, everything from your own property into the wildland urban interface, which we live in, often referred to as the WUI.
And, you know, there's a couple perspectives to think about in this conversation. There's what to practically do when wildfires come into your community. And then there's what to mentally do when wildfires come into your community. And let's start with the mental conversation. You know, one thing that I've learned is that my anxiety also exacerbates my health issues. So when I fear that a wildfire smoke may come into where I'm living, then my anxiety worsens my health conditions. And then when the wildfire smoke actually does come in, it also worsens my health issues. And I'm wondering whether that resonates at all with you and whether you've come up with any solutions for that.
Yeah, it does resonate a lot with me. And one of the primary things I usually do when I'm stressed by anything, whether it any type of anxiety driven response, is I really like to have a couple different breath practices, like box breathing or long exhales, to switch off that sympathetic nervous system and drop back into your parasympathetic nervous system. But I find that, ironically, is counterintuitive when you have smoke outside. So you might be inside your house with all the windows closed, and it might be getting a little hot, because imagine that it's August and it's wildfire season. In this example, you know, with wildfires particularly, breathing is hard, because that's, I think, something that we're really anxious about, is how healthy is the air we're breathing in. So I find that if you can make sure you have like a HEPA filter and you can do breath exercises near that, that's super helpful. But for other natural disasters like hurricanes, or in, you know, the Caribbean and the Gulf of Mexico, or whether it be tornadoes in the Midwest, I think you really have an opportunity to use that scaled breathing or your 4x4x4 breath to relax your nervous system in an immediate response situation where you feel yourself heightening. Another tool I use is I like to get prepared. I find that my sense of anxiety is really driven by my desire for some amount of control over a situation. And in these natural disasters, control isn't something we have. So something I really like to do for fire season specifically is I like to get my preparedness kind of ready. So that's getting a go bag ready with anything I'd like to have for evacuation with my evacuation plan laid out. And it's not really catastrophizing the situation and allowing myself to spiral further into that anxiety. It's creating a sense of ownership and stewardship when that anxiety creeps in of, okay, this is what I can control, understanding that I cannot control the fire or the potential hurricane and gale force winds that are coming in.
Right. Yeah, I like that. And we've had some interesting conversations about how to prepare for wildfire and mountain communities, because one of the challenges with mountain communities is that there's often only one road out through a canyon or something. You've shared some interesting information about evacuating Big Sky. Is there anything that you've learned about mountain communities in general about evacuation that might be helpful?
Yeah, something that I think is super pertinent for mountain communities in general is that you have different draws or drainages and very different wind patterns based on those drainages. And we find that wildfire really tracks with those drainages. So something that I think is important for all mountain community members to know is when there are evacuation orders in place, oftentimes it's going to be phased based on the people who are the closest and nearest to danger. And if you are somebody not in that immediate evacuation zone and just a prepare yourself and get ready zone, it's really important you practice shelter in place, because if you're on the east side of a drainage and that's where the fire is coming from, you should be the first to evacuate before anybody on the west side. Something I saw in California was really when they would evacuate one zone, many zones would go at the same time and it would back traffic up, making a pretty stressful situation. Here in mountain towns, particularly given the topography, it's super helpful to prioritize phased evacuation when that moment comes, so we aren't putting a bunch of people on the road stuck in their car in traffic. Especially, again, it's not applicable to every community, but for Big Sky in particular, we do have one road out. And so it's important that we're putting those at the closest threat onto the road to evacuate first. And if you think about a lot of drainages still have water in them in August, if they're big enough, it's much harder for a fire to jump that water. So you're much safer on that. For this example, that west side of the drainage to shelter in place, make sure you have some N95 masks in your house for any wildfire smoke, and know that your turn will come appropriately and that the authorities, no matter how high your anxiety is in that moment, if you are listening to the authorities' plan, which they will push out through push notifications on your phone, they have everybody's best interest at heart and they are doing everything in their power to take care of you. So remembering that they're your ally and they are monitoring the system as a whole is super important to remember.
Cool. I mean, not cool. This is a terrible topic, but
it is kind of a terrible topic. And it's like, it is hard not to get into a place where you're getting stressed out just merely talking about it. But it is one of those things that us worrying more doesn't help the situation. So this is part of our journey on becoming like educated stewards in an evacuation situation, so we can all work together to stay safe.
One of the things that I love about you is you're not afraid to say what you think, and that you often think differently than others in a good way.
Yeah.
And so given the title of this podcast, I'm Perfectly Honest, is there anything that you want to share that might be contrary to popular thought on this topic?
Yeah, I think the most important thing we can actually educate on is shelter in place. There is a tendency for preparedness and evacuation preparedness to focus on that with wildfire. And I think the two most important things that get kicked under the rug are the concept of sheltering in place as a really amazing and empowering tool. And then also try not to discount the fact that wildfire smoke is the most pervasive threat we have, because that comes whether or not the fire comes. So I'll start with, I guess, the second piece there is we talk a lot about evacuation. And I think talking about wildfire smoke might actually be more important for everybody's long-term health. It's not as urgent feeling, but if you think of year over year being exposed to wildfire smoke in proximity or at a great rate, it's really hard on our lungs as we age. So preparing your home for it by making sure you have good seals, like on your windows, on your doors, et cetera, that can be incredibly helpful. Getting a HEPA filter in your house or more than one, also incredibly helpful for mitigating like that smoke exposure and that long-term exposure to your lungs. The second part of it, and I think it is the most important part we need to be learning in any mountain community, is really the importance of sheltering in place. Sheltering in place can be an amazing asset when you realistically are probably sheltering in place a few hours up to 24 or 48. It's going to be very rare that it's any longer than that. And almost everybody in a mountain town is going to have a pantry filled with a little bit of food that can make you last a day without having to go to the grocery store. So that's always good to have. It's good to have fresh water. And it's really good to recognize that sheltering in place allows our entire community to thrive in a situation that's going to escalate and be potentially scary. And for those of us who are able to shelter in place, it allows our human ecosystem to go in the verve with what is happening in the environmental ecosystem at the same time. So I know everybody tends to talk about evacuation, and that is an important part, but I just think shelter in place is one of those things that I want to shout from the rooftops every day to every person.
Well, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking like, this is really important information for me to know because I do live in a mountain town, but I am not sure how applicable it is to the rest of our listeners. And so I was thinking about the broader themes here, and what I'm taking away is that I think in all situations, things aren't necessarily black and white. And especially when your life is on the line, it's important to talk to a couple people who really are on the ground about this, if you can, rather than just reading social media and things like that. One thing that I learned about thinking differently is that I think it's important to do your own questioning. So one thing that I learned to my detriment, actually, is that I figured out that the little neighborhood that I live in Big Sky, that the HOA actually voted against wildfire mitigation. And there's these huge trees that are beautiful and make it this winter wonderland in the winter. And as you helped me figure out, it is terrifying now to be there in the summer. And thinking about things like that when you buy homes and when you're trying to keep yourself safe are important. I'm not sure I would have bought that home had I had known that. That was a really important lesson for me.
Yeah. And I think it is something, and we see it all the time. Snow engages with HOAs on a really regular basis as part of our only jurisdictional enforcement mechanism in Big Sky. HOAs and POAs are really important partners for us as the sustainability network organization, network being the key word there. And what we really have seen in the last couple of years, and it's definitely amplified by insurance companies walking out on insuring property, is that we see these HOAs and POAs that maybe 2 or 3 or even 4 years ago would have voted like your HOA did. Now they're having to change their tune. So I think your HOA in particular is actually going through a reassessment of that. But I do think it is something that, like, a neighborhood. Like, you can wildfire proof your home all you want, but if your neighbor's home is a tinderbox, you have that spark right next to you available. So it's important to do this at a systemic level when you're working with the HOAs, educating them. And it is, whether it's fortunate or unfortunate, right now, a lot of people in mountain communities, whether it's Big Sky, or even I know in California and Florida, people are losing insurance for flooding potential. And it's a very big factor that these insurance companies actually can't carry the liability. So because of that, the HOAs and POAs are having to change their tune. And I'm sorry that it's coming from a forced place and it's coming from a stressful place. I do think it's going to be healthier in the long run to have less fuels in the forest and to have less fuels directly around homes that, yes, you're right. The winter wonderland of having those trees right there next to your neighborhood and in your neighborhood is so beautiful, but you can still have some of those, but have some balance with some amount of thinning. I think something many people think of is, well, if we are fuels mitigating, which means cutting down forest, then it's a clear cut. We were touring a property owners association area, like a neighborhood today, that has recently done some fuels mitigation techniques this summer. And it's not that they raise the forest down. It's that they intersperse where they allow the trees to grow for actually growing a healthier ecosystem. So you're reducing fuels and you are growing a healthier ecosystem overall. Big Sky is particularly known for its lodgepole pine that grows very densely. It's not easy for wildlife to move around. So removing some trees can actually be really helpful for the ecosystem as a whole, thinking from tree to fauna. So I think that's a really important insight. And it's something that I think has caused stress, like for you purchasing that property in retrospect, but it is something we are seeing those owners associations shift on based on need at this juncture. So I'm hopeful we're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I hope so too. And the other thing that was going through my head was that I'm not sure that this topic is that applicable this time of year, as it's Halloween today, actually, when we're recording this. But I'm not sure that's true either, because the most destructive wildfire in Boulder, Colorado, where I lived previously, happened during the winter, unfortunately. So
yeah.
So another thing that helps me is to actually think about how I might be able to make a difference with issues like this, because it can get so overwhelming when I feel like wildfires and hurricanes are just going to continue to worsen. And so for most of our listeners who live outside of Big Sky, what do you think are the most important things for people to do to make a difference with climate change?
That's a great question. And it's something I think about a lot. The most important thing you can do after doing this for just 4 years, but the most important thing you can really do and take action on is by speaking up about it and talking to your neighbor and talking in groups about how you see the climate changing and what you're doing to take action. Find an informed resource, whether it's snow here in Big Sky. These resources are applicable a lot of other places, or your local nonprofit, like in Summit County in Colorado, they have HC3, which is a really good nonprofit that educates on climate adaptation and mitigation. Learn what you could do both in your yard and be an advocate for it, both with your neighborhood, with the people you work with. And then thirdly, and most importantly, make sure you're advocating at a legislative level and writing to your representatives, both in the state and federal level. I think that's something, after 4 years or 4.5 years of running this operation, the programs and projects SNOW puts into place are so important for helping that momentum for climate change adaptation and mitigation. But where we really see scalable impact is when we're influencing others to hop on the bandwagon. And it sounds cliche to say, but creating collective impact around climate action is the most important thing you can do. And knowing where your emissions come from and informing yourself, and they're pretty consistent across the board. They're going to come from your home and your transportation. So knowing that those two things are your primary emissions factors, you can personally get a home energy audit and understand how to be more energy efficient in your home and make some really inexpensive upgrades to make that happen, with longer term goals that are more expensive upgrades to make that. That doesn't mean everybody's getting a solar panel. That might mean something as simple as weatherization stripping on doors and windows and caulking in specific spots. Transportation. Think about using your bike in the summer months if you can, if that's feasible in your mountain town, biking from your home into town center or wherever that area may be. I understand sometimes in our communities that's hard, so maybe consider investing in an e-bike. And then coming to that, think about where you're able to carpool or where you're able to take public transit. Those are really good practices that you can engage in personally that will make a difference. Something I think that's missed is often actually where you're investing. So one of the most scalable impact pieces besides your voice with collective action is where your money is invested. If you understand banking, you're going to understand that for every dollar invested, it's going to have a scalable impact on investment somewhere else. And if your bank is practicing really ethical investment in environment and sustainability and governance, that's going to make a pretty big impact that totally ripples out further beyond what you're able to do yourself. So I listed a lot of things. I know it's a lot of options, but it's really trying to meet you where you're at and find an opportunity for you to be part of a community in taking climate action.
Love that. And the one thing that I want to add is that I've recently had this experience that has helped me understand the importance of spending time with people who have different views than yourself.
Yes.
So I spent most of my adult life living in Boulder, Colorado, one of the greenest places on the planet. And it is really easy to be green in Boulder, Colorado. Most yes. people have high income. It's safe to ride your bike around town because there's protected bike lanes and all those things. Most yes. people have garages that are prefabricated with plugs for electric cars. And I always look down on people who drove big old gas guzzling pickup trucks. And yep. now I am living in Paradise Valley, Montana, where everyone drives those. And I can see why. So I am living 30 minutes from town down a bumpy dirt road right now. And I had to unexpectedly, I shouldn't say had to, but my car took an unexpected turn that was not going to be economically efficient for me to fix that car. So I needed to buy a car with very little notice. And I don't have the ability to plug in a car right now. So I tried to buy a hybrid, and there were hardly any for sale in Bozeman. And the ones that were for sale didn't have enough ground clearance for me to safely get out of my driveway in the winter. And I ended up buying a car that was less fuel efficient than my previous car, because I need a rough and tough car that can handle a dirt road and get out of a foot of snow at a standstill. And it just gave me a lot more appreciation for why people drive these gas guzzling pickup trucks in this area. And so I'm thinking more about, how can I reconcile this personal consumer choice that I made by thinking about how I can address some of the systemic issues that are making it so there are not affordable and available solutions for people like my neighbors in Paradise Valley, Montana.
Totally. And that's, I think, something that gets missed in the climate conversation a lot, is what a privilege it is to take some of this action. And when we talk about, you know, some home upgrades being really inexpensive, you know, it in a mountain town, it's like more than likely that if you're living here full time year round, you're actually a renter. because it's an incredibly expensive place to live. So you get into the conversation of what a privilege it is to take climate action and how do we find solutions that bring everybody, whether their lifestyle is ranching or they have, you know, a low income or they have a high income, how do we create opportunities for every type of human to be part of the solution together and create equity in the, you know, in a just climate change? So I think having a just transition was a really big emphasis the last 4 years, and it's become less so of one, but I do think taking into account somebody's lifestyle and capability and being part of a climate advocate, it varies greatly. And I think that's why a lot of the sustainability and climate action messaging is really complex and isn't punchy and isn't sexy, you know?
Yeah. And I also think being honest about your true contribution to climate change is important too. You know, yeah. I don't want to shame people, but my favorite example of this is that I know this couple that's they're huge donors to environmental nonprofits, and they drove a Tesla to the private airport to get on a huge, huge private jet. I mean, like almost as big as a commercial airliner private jet. Mm-hmm. And there may have been a very valid reason for that. And they do wonderful things. So I'm not saying that to shame them. I'm saying that just because you can't always judge a book by its cover. And, you know, some of these folks that I have met with my experience in Montana, even though my friends in Boulder would totally look down on them for their lack of recycling and their car choice and all those things, their footprint is far less than any of my friends in Boulder because they don't have enough money to fly ever. Like literally, yep. Some of them have never gotten on a plane before. Yep. And they don't really leave their hometown. Like you said, there's solutions and there's empathy for everyone. And I just have to give a quick shout out for one of my portfolio companies from the Mergeland Venture Fund, EV Match. But I think they're such a good example of how creative solutions can address this. So they allow people who have an extra charger in their garage or some sort of a plug outside their home and office buildings, et cetera, to connect with renters or people that just need an extra place to charge to earn money by offering their charge.
And that's awesome.
Yeah, I would love to see more solutions like that.
Yep, I would too. And to that point, you bring up kind of that dichotomy of where is your climate action. And there's a great short video from a few years back, I think Pow put it together, that's called Being an Imperfect Advocate. And it's recognizing that sometimes your job necessitates you to get on a plane frequently, or that your lifestyle might require specific constraints that don't allow you to, like, if you live where you live, like, recycling is actually difficult. Like, that is a genuinely honest statement. And recycling correctly and correct recycling education is not prevalent. So it's just one of those things to recognize that everybody has an opportunity to make themselves one step better in climate action. And whatever that step is, that is a valid and worthy step that's contributing to the collective impact. And recognizing that you might sit here and, like, one of my favorite things, this is my imperfect advocacy. And it reminds me of the name of your podcast. It's like, I love to travel abroad because I like to uproot myself out of my comfort zone and put myself into a situation where I'm immensely uncomfortable and readjust my expectations. It sets me straight with what my personal goals are in the long term. And it gets my head in a space where I come home super grateful for everything I have and understanding that we're interconnected, no matter if you live in Big Sky, Montana, or Port Moresby, Papua New Guinea. It literally doesn't matter. We all have a part to play in the forward solutions. And just because we're imperfect in the ways that we are does not mean that we can't advocate for everybody, including ourselves, to be better.
I love that. So, in the spirit of being an imperfect advocate, and I'm perfectly honest, I'd love to close out by sharing one thing that we've done that's made us imperfect and one thing that we're particularly proud of that we've done for sustainability. So, I'll start. So, for me, my worst climate confession is that when I was struggling with my back, it was hard for me to sit for even like 45 minutes. And I had the opportunity to go to Florida for a month. And I really didn't want to give that up. And there was just no possible way that I was going to be able to ride on a commercial flight. So I booked a cross-country flight on a private jet. And I booked like the smallest, most economical jet that I could possibly find. And something happened with that plane, and I got a plane that was kind of similar to that one that I just talked about that was huge, huge. It was so big that I had my own personal flight attendant. Oh my gosh. And I laid there. They had like this. My criteria is I had to have a seat that could lay down because I couldn't sit for that long. And I laid on this perfect bed with this flight attendant who brought me this blanket. So that's my worst. And the thing that I feel most proud of is that I raised, I would estimate about $20 million for sustainability related efforts by just building an incredible network of people that was easy to reach out to. So, yeah, I feel really proud of that. How
You
are you,
should.
Lizzie?
That's a great offset of your imperfect advocacy. That's a perfect balance of like the two things. Mine are going to be similar, but on kind of a smaller scale. So, as I mentioned before, my favorite thing is to like uproot myself and go far, far away to recalibrate with myself. It helps me recenter. Sometimes that is as easy as going backpacking just in Yellowstone, and that's a 40-minute drive. But my imperfectness really comes from the fact that I am a world traveler, and I have been for a long time. I love getting on a plane and going to a different continent a few times a year. And that is certainly my carbon footprint there, like basically just dwarfs almost everything else I do in the year. And that's something I struggle with, knowing that it's not good for the environment. So that is definitely something for me that I struggle with, that is part of my what I feel is like who I am to my core and my person, and what brings me joy is that travel. But it is something that I struggle with frequently. To juxtapose that, I am really proud of the fact that with snow, we have gotten stakeholders across the community to take action on climate that were not yet doing so in the last 5 years. That piece to me kind of speaks to that collective action. And I love being part of a mechanism that motivates others to do better and do better for the environment in our community in the long run. So I think those are kind of my two, they're very similar to yours, but those are my two balance of being imperfect as a traveler who likes to get on a plane. And I'm really proud of the group of people in Big Sky that we have motivated, and the participation we have regionally with Mountain Towns 2030, which is a collective of mountain resort towns working towards net zero emissions goals and climate resilience. I'm just really proud of the work we've done to amplify some of the solutions for our communities that can make a difference. Those are my two for sure.
I love that. So, Lizzie, if somebody wants to take a look at what snow has done to address climate change in the Big Sky community to see how they might be able to bring that to their community, how would they check that out?
Yeah, so SNO has a website, bigskysno.org, and we have all of our projects and programs on there, sharing highlight and engaging people to be part of the solution, whether it's in Big Sky or otherwise. And one of our biggest goals is replicability. Living in a mountain town or a resort town in general, we get so many people in and out of here in a day or in a season that have an opportunity to see sustainable living in many capacities that they could bring home. So what we really like to do is say that if you find anything on our website that speaks to you, you can reach out to us at hello@bigskysno.org and ask us, because we will send you resources to replicate that program or project in your community. We will talk about how we funded it and how you could potentially fund it in your community. The goal is to create widespread solutions. So we are happy to interact with anybody and everybody who's working towards the shared common goal that we believe is better for both the environment and the people living in the community. I think it's really apparent that we have in our culture, like, a difference between what the human experience is and what the environment is. And I always like to remind people that as humans, we are part of the environment. And so the more we can recognize that and honor our land and learn from our land and listen to the flora and the fauna and work in symbiosis with it, we have that opportunity to improve. So I think that's how you find out about SNO. We're always here to connect about solutions, and we're just really grateful to be invited to be talking with you today, Elizabeth.
Love it. Cool. All right. Well, thank you, Lizzie. And thanks all for listening. And until next time.